To the north of the goldfields surrounding Johannesburg sat the richest square mile in all of Africa, Sandton. Formerly a suburb of Joburg, Sandton successfully divorced itself from the Golden City and became a municipality in its own right. Now free of spreading urban blight, the affluent white community of Sandton safely prospered in its exclusive posh enclave. The colour of the driver's skin disqualified him from living in Sandton, even in the unlikely event he could afford it. The place he called home was bleak and dangerous. It was a bastard, an unloved city within a city. Institutionally named Southwestern Townships, better known as Soweto, this long ostracized black suburb of Johannesburg was a soulless ghetto. Row upon row of decaying shacks inhabited the featureless landscape. The flotsam and jetsam of lost lives reflected in an indescribable waste. Carcasses of spent tires, broken glass bottles, rusted oil cans, and dank corrugated cardboard boxes littered the uneven roads and unkempt alleys. A pervasive sense of darkness haunted the place, despite the cheery brightness of the African sun. No wonder. The place was smothered in a sulphurous grey cloud of wood-fired stoves and gas fumes, and the tramped-down spirit of almost 1.5 million souls added to the gloom. Their misery was understandable, being deprived of basic civilizing amenities such as electricity and indoor plumbing. The overwhelming fraught of the place, the stench of an undeserved and overcrowded population, was pervasive. It clung to clothes, hair, and bodies of the township's inhabitants. This stench remained with the Soweto resident even when leaving the confines of the ghetto. Soweto's deprivations made driver Stanwell Marunda's expedition to Sandton all the more disorienting. The beaten-up pickup wasn't his. It belonged to a co-worker at the company warehouse. Normally, he got around by Green Mamba, the puce-green painted buses reserved only for blacks. These unkempt monsters were unsafe and unreliable. Suffocating diesel fumes, numerous breakdowns, frequent crashes, and inexplicable delays were cause for concern, but the Tsotsis, the gangsters, were the greatest threat. They preyed on hard-working commuters, men and women. Stanwell was terrified each payday. These hoodlums had no compunction about murdering a victim over a meager 20-rand pay packet. Their killing method was both quiet and bloodless, like the strike of a serpent's fang. A sharpened bicycle spoke was shunted between the victim's ribs. With the threat of imminent death, it's no wonder these segregated buses were nicknamed after the deadliest venomous snake in Africa, the 9-foot mamba.
"H," Stanwell muttered. "Where am I?"
He slapped himself on the temple in frustration. Frozen by indecision, he slowed to a crawl, only to be rewarded with the blaring horn of the irritated driver behind him. Stanwell quickly accelerated. The house he was looking for was lost behind the high walls and gates protecting the massive homes that inhabited the well-heeled neighborhood. Here, the homes were personal monuments to the affluent and playground to the architects who indulged them. Every magnificent home had the derivative look of a Hollywood film set. Faux foreign styles from different eras strove for attention. A mock Tudor neighbored a Mediterranean revival. A Victorian Queen Anne faced a Frank Lloyd Wright lookalike, and a manor house vied with a southern plantation for its place in the sun. A pity, really, considering South Africa had a beautiful, authentic look of its own. It was as if the Western Cape had a monopoly on colonial architecture and prevented other provinces from using it. These definitive, fine-looking, whitewashed, Cape Dutch-styled homes were modelled from the late 18th century. Their classic distinctive features, the flowing, ornate gable soaring in a curlicue above the centred front entrance, with smaller gables boxing in each end and tall wooden shutters framing the windows, would have added handsomely to the local Highveld architectural scene.